we're in this time of year now where you start getting all of the like annual review kind of things. So you've got like sports personality of the year where you get to like, I don't know, watch like Joe Root doing ramp shots, or, you know, you get to watch Keely Hodgkinson winning the 800 meters Olympic gold, and you get to like relive the big moments of 2024 in the sporting world. And then you'll have your own personal ones as well. So depending on what media you use, I get Spotify Wrapped each year, which comes at the end of the year, and it tells me what I've been listening to over the course of the year. So it tells you like your most listened to artists were and how many hours you spent listening to them. Your most listened to song was. Anyone want to guess what my top five most listened to songs were? Spice Girls, no Spice Girls, didn't feature. Although I will say that for most of the year, the account was shared by my children, which had a big impact on what Jimmy Eat World were in there. So my top five most listened to songs, three of them were postmodern jukebox songs. So the first, my most listened to song of last year was the song One Week by Postmodern Jukebox, which is a cover of a Bare Naked Ladies song. So there you go. If you want to go home and listen to it, you'll have a great time. I listened to it an inordinate amount of times last year. That was me. But then by four, so my top three were PMJ songs. Number four was a Jimmy Eat World song. And number five, which I was horrified at, was the song Hooked on a Feeling, right? Which I have never consciously chosen to listen to ever in my entire life. Like, who would choose to listen to that song? But apparently my fifth most listened to song last year was Hooked on a Feeling. If you don't know it, then it's probably for the best. But anyway, all of this kind of yearly review thing got me wondering and thinking a little bit about what have been the most influential bits of the Bible for me over the past year. I just got my mind like started to think about this. Like, what have been the bits of the Bible which I've read this year, and not only read, but which I've kept returning to, which I've kept thinking about, which I've kept meditating on, which have really spoken to me over this past year. You see, at Grace Church, we believe that the Bible is living and active. And so by that, what we mean is we believe that when you open the Bible and you read the words in it, God, through his Spirit, takes those words and speaks them into your heart. And that means that the message of the Bible doesn't change. That great story of the Bible, of a God who loves us so much that he came to earth in the person of Jesus, that he went to the cross and died so that we could be forgiven, that doesn't change. But that same message is applied to our life through the Spirit differently at different points of our life. The Spirit illuminates it and helps us to appreciate different elements of it as we expose it at different points. And because of that, there have been some specific passages that over this last year I could say, God's really spoken to me through these over the past year. So this is what I'm going to do just this week. I'm going to give you the Ben Parker top three Bible passages of 2024. That's what you're going to get. I bet as you were all turning up here today, you were all thinking, I just wonder what Ben's favorite Bible passages of last year were. Well, you don't have to wait any longer because I'm going to tell you. So I'm going to give you three. I was going to do five, and then I started writing it, and I was like, we're going to be here all afternoon if I try and do five. So you're only getting three. But if you want to know the others, you can talk to me about them afterwards. So let's get to it. Number three, a couple of mornings each week, I sit down with my girls, Anna and Hope, who are sat here, and we open up the Bible together, and we just work through. We've worked through a few books together. We worked through James together. We've worked through some other bits. We worked through Mark together. And recently, in fact, for most of the past year, the bit of the Bible that me and Hope and Anna have been reading together has been the book of Ecclesiastes, because I love to have a good time. And so me and Anna and Hope have been sitting there, and we've just been working through this book called Ecclesiastes, which is in the Old Testament, and it's part of a category of writing called the wisdom literature. Now, the wisdom literature is literature where God speaks in kind of general patterns about things that are going on in the world and helps us to navigate our complicated and often confusing lives. I love getting into the wisdom literature, and I particularly love getting into it with teenagers. So for those of you who are parents of teenagers, I love getting into teenagers because in some ways that's what it was written for. It was written to help people as they're growing up learn how to navigate the world that we live in. And so going through Ecclesiastes with my girls has been one of the great joys of my life. The other thing I love about wisdom literature is because it speaks in kind of generalities, it takes a bit of wrestling with. You've got to chew it over. You've got to talk about it. You've got to really like try and work out kind of what is this saying and how does it apply into where we are. And so it's been great just to sit down with Anna and Hope and just chat about some of those things. What do we think this means? Why do we think it's written down? Now, the book of Ecclesiastes is unique because what it explores is this question. What would the world look like if the God of the Bible didn't exist? It's kind of a weird thing to have in the Bible. It's this book which explores the question. What would life look like if we just took God out of the equation? If the God of the Bible wasn't out there, if it was just me and what I see around us, what would that mean for life? What would that make life look like? And famously, the famous refrain of the book of Ecclesiastes is, for those of you who don't know, is meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. That's their conclusion. If you take the God of the Bible out of it, you look around at all the busyness of life, all the work, all of the pleasure, all of the relationships, all the things you do, and it's all just ultimately meaningless. There's no purpose to any of it. It's just a way to fill time. That's the conclusion of the book. But alongside that, he observes, as he looks at this world, some things that are better and some things that are worse. This is kind of how wisdom literature works. It says, this is better than this. It might not have any meaning, but it's still better than the other thing. And anyway, here's the verse that in chapter 7 that I've come back to a lot if I can make this work. Is that working? Yeah. Here you go, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 21. Okay, this is what it says. It says, do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, and you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. I don't know if you ever find yourself thinking about what other people think of you. I don't know if you ever find yourself going home, lying in bed, and wondering what the people around you actually think of you, like really make of you. Do people actually like having you around, or do they just merely tolerate you? Do you annoy people, or do people genuinely appreciate the things you have to say? It strikes me that many of us, myself included, waste a significant amount of energy second-guessing what people mean by the things that they say. Why did they say that thing? And, to pick up some of the language of this proverb, wondering what people say about us when we're not there. Maybe you've been hurt before by this. Maybe you've had experience of hearing something that someone said about you behind your back and being hurt by that. And maybe in your most insecure moments, you worry that that's what everyone's doing. That's the kind of thing everyone's saying about you when you're not there. It'd be fair to say that in a normal year in my life, I will experience numerous moments of relational insecurity. Times where I worry what people think about me. And during those times this year, God has ministered to me through this verse. I've returned to it many times. I read it. It'll be months ago that I first read it with the girls. But I've returned to it because I think this verse is really helpful because it tells us what is the antidote, what is the cure to that kind of insecurity. And this is his suggestion. Don't pay attention to every word people say. There is much that people say, even much that people say about us, that we just don't need to pay attention to. And that means two things. It means we don't need to seek it out. So we don't need to be constantly trying to find out, oh, what did they say about me? Oh, did they say that about me? We don't need to ask. We can just let that go. We don't need to seek out finding out what people are saying about us when we're not there. And it also means when we do find out about it, we don't have to assume it's a big deal. You see, in our insecurity, we tend to assume that what people say behind our back is what they really think. Yeah, that's what they really think. They might be nice to my face, but what they really think about me is the stuff they say when I'm not there. But I just want to point out there's no particular reason why that should be true. There's no particular reason why the things people say behind our back is any more true than the stuff they say to their face. In fact, I would suggest that that is not what you assume about yourself. Is the stuff that you say about people behind their back more true than the stuff you say to their face? I don't know. You can answer that for yourself. But it's not what I assume about myself, so why do I assume that about other people? But notice why he tells us not to be concerned by what people are saying about us. He doesn't say, which is, I think, what we so often say, oh, don't be concerned because they're probably not even talking about you. I think it's cool what he says. He says the exact opposite. He says, don't be concerned because they probably are. Like, they may well be talking about you. Like, the reason why you shouldn't be concerned is because if you're concerned, you might hear what they're actually saying about you. You see, we assume that the solution to this is going, oh, no, they're probably not. It's fine. But he says the exact opposite. He says, don't be concerned, because if you're concerned, you might actually hear what they actually say, and it might be better not to know that thing. It might just be better not to know what people say when you're not listening. That's not how we tend to think. That's just not how any of us tend to think. We don't tend to think, oh, it doesn't really matter what people say when I'm not there. We think it really matters, and so I need to know. I must know. What do people say when I'm not there about me? We often say, oh, I'd love to be a fly in the wall. I'd love to be able to hear what people say about me when I'm not there. His advice is, you wouldn't love that. It'd actually be better not to experience that. Listen to where he ends. For you know in your heart that many times you have cursed others. You see, this is why he says ultimately you shouldn't pay too much attention to what people say behind your back, because you're guilty of doing it too. Can any of us sit here and say, I've never said anything when someone else wasn't listening about someone that I would be sad if it got back to them? Are any of us innocent of that? You see, this is one of the great lies of our culture. One of the great lies of our culture is that it tells us that we are a victim who is sinned against. But one of the central messages of the Bible is that we are both victims and perpetrators. We are both sinned against and sinners. One of the great lies we're all tempted to believe is that I am a good person who other people treat badly. And therefore, when we hear that someone said something about us, unkind about us, we feel badly treated and furious. We feel betrayed and hurt and angry. But the teacher in Ecclesiastes says, if you're honest with yourself, there have been many times where you have spoken ill of others, which you would prefer them not to know about. Or if they were to know about them, you'd prefer them not to pay too much attention to it. And if you're honest with yourself, you will probably find that most of the times you did that, it wasn't because you didn't like the person. It didn't reveal what you truly thought about the person. All it revealed was that you are capable of being unkind and thoughtless and careless in your speech. That's all it showed. I can't tell you how liberating this verse has been for me in 2024. I don't need to know what people say about me when I'm not there. And I don't need to pay too much attention to it, even if I do find out. I need to stop holding others to a higher standard than I hold myself to. And I can stop second-guessing what people really think about me and just get on with loving the person that God's put in front of me right there and right then. So there you go. That's my third favorite verse of the year. That is the one of the the verse that God has ministered to me hugely through throughout the year. Let's keep going. In May of last year, a few guys from Grace Church, our life group leaders and assistant life group leaders, we went down to join with our friends from Redeemer Church in Leeds to do some joint training together. And we were looking at how do we as life groups make sure that we remain missional in our life groups. By that, we mean how do we make sure that these small groups we have still are interested in sharing the good news about Jesus with people? How do we stop them being really inward-looking and just caring about who's there and instead thinking outwardly, how do we share this good news with the people in our lives? I did a session in the afternoon of that, looking at the invitations of Jesus. Like, what are the things that Jesus invites us to? And one of the verses I looked at was Matthew 11, verse 28 to 29. My guess is not many of you have Ecclesiastes 7, verse 21 and 22 memorized, but many of you will have come across the next verse, I would guess. It reads like this: "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." What is Jesus' invitation there? What is he inviting us to? It is, I think, quite simply to come to him in all of our weariness. To come to him with all of our burdens, all those things that weigh us down, and to find what? To find rest for our souls. I don't know about what 2024 has looked like for you, but life can often feel wearying. There have been numerous times in 2024 where burdens have felt particularly heavy in my life. And in those moments, in those times, God has spoken to me often this year through this verse. And here is the question I've kept returning to. It's this question: am I willing to take Jesus at his word? Jesus' offer here is completely outlandish. Who could claim this? Who could say, "Come to me with all your soul weariness, and I will give you rest for your souls"? That's an unbelievable claim. I would never make that claim to anyone. I would never say to someone, "Hey, come bring all your soul weariness to me. Bring me all your burden and I will give you rest." That's an unbelievable claim. But that is what Jesus says. He says, "I will give you rest. You will find rest for your soul." And so this year, I've been coming back to this. Jesus, hearing Jesus say these words to me: "Come to me and you will find a peace. You will find a recovery. You will find a lightness which so often feels elusive to you." That is an incredible offer. And if I'm honest, it describes precisely what I so often feel like I need. And the question is, in those moments where I feel weary and burdened, am I going to do what Jesus says here? What does Jesus say we need to do in those moments? Come to me. Is that what I'm going to do? When I'm weary and I feel burdened and I feel tired in my soul, am I going to go to Jesus? Am I going to turn to him in prayer? Am I going to read about him? Am I going to meditate on him? Am I going to talk about him? Am I going to trust in his promises and enjoy the forgiveness and life he offers? Am I going to depend on him and his spirit rather than trying to control everything myself? Am I going to obey him? When I am weary and burdened throughout this year, I've reminded myself of this outrageous offer of Jesus. And I've sought to just come to him afresh each time. Just come to him. That verse has been powerful in those moments. But this verse has also been powerful in another way this year. And it's been powerful to me in thinking about what is the good news of Jesus that I'm looking to share. If you look at the back there, we have a banner which says "Sharing the Good News of Jesus." That is one of the kind of taglines of Grace Church. When we formed Grace Church, whenever it was, 9 years ago now, that was what we said we want Grace Church to be about. We want it to be about sharing the good news of Jesus. The question is, what is the good news of Jesus? Now, there's loads of answers to that question, but surely in part, it looks like sharing the invitations that Jesus gives. Jesus stands in front of a crowd of people and says, come to me if you're weary and heavy laden, and you will find rest for your souls. Surely part of what I need to be saying to people is that same invitation. Come to Jesus if you are weary in your soul, and he will give you rest. As I look around Grace Church, I see lots of people who are weary and burdened. They just seem tired in their souls. Life has got on top of them. And so what I want to do as a leader of Grace Church is I want to take Jesus at his word, and I want to invite you to come to him in all of your tiredness and find rest for your soul. And similarly, as I look around Hartlepool, as I walk through the streets, I see many people who seem soul weary. Just tired of life and the battle and confusion and all the brokenness. And so I just want to keep offering Jesus' invitation to people in our town. I want people, when they come across Grace Church, to hear Jesus saying to them, come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. That's what I want people to hear. That's what I want you to hear this afternoon. See, it's been powerful in terms of how God has helped me in thinking about my weariness and my burdens, but it's also been powerful in terms of thinking about what am I trying to do? What am I trying to tell people about when I'm talking about Jesus? There you go, that's my second. I've got one more. This is my final verse. This is the verse that I have found myself returning to most frequently over the past year. And it's a verse that you find at the beginning of Hebrews 12. It reads like this. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. There have been so many times where that verse has been incredibly important to me. There have been times over the past year where I have found myself battling with envy. I know not everybody struggles with envy. It's a thing I do struggle with. I look at other people's lives, at other people's gifts, at other people's abilities. I hear other people being asked to do things or being praised, and I find myself wishing that I was the person being asked to do those things, that I was the person being praised, that I was the person who could do those things. And during one of those times this year, I found myself thinking about this verse and just reminding myself of the very simple truth that God calls on me to run my race. He calls on me to run the race he has marked out for me. I need to be less concerned about the races other people are running and how I compare to them. I need to care less about how I compare to other people, and instead I need to trust that God has a race marked out for me that I need to run. This verse was a key part of God starting to put to death that envy which had started to take root in my heart. There have been other times over this past year where I've faced other battles. There have been times over this past year where I've struggled for focus and energy. Times where talks I do here at Grace Church have felt hard to write, and I've just felt short of ideas. Many times where I find myself wondering whether what I do actually makes any difference to anyone or anything. What's the point in working hard if none of it really matters and if none of it really does anything? At these points, it's been, again, this verse more than any other which God has used to spur me on. It's through this verse that God has been teaching me to trust him with the outcomes and instead to just focus on the race that God has put in front of me. It's this verse which God has used to help me refine my energy and my focus as I've learned to trust that God has marked a race for me which I need to run. It's this verse more than any other this year that has helped me remember that much more important than any grand plans I may have is how I run the race that's set before me each and every day. Each day, God puts in front of me people for me to love and care for, and I need to step into the race he's marked and love those people. Every day God has prepared good works for me to do, and each day I just need to step into them. Every day God has new mercies for me to enjoy, and I just need to experience those mercies afresh each day. I have lost count of the number of times over this past year I've just said to myself, run the race set before you. Just those words. In a complicated and confusing life, the reminder to fix my eyes on Jesus and then get on with what is in front of me has felt to me freeing and energizing and life-giving. That's been my experience of that verse. A few weeks ago, I went into my girls' bedroom. They were doing some work, and specifically, they were doing some work on Tolkien. Anna was getting really stressed at this point. And so I went in to find out. Anna's looking shocked. Me, stressed? Never. She was getting really stressed about the work when I went in. I went in and I said, look, Anna, what's the problem? She said, they're asking me what influence Welsh mythology had on Tolkien's writing, and I just don't know. Now, I've read a reasonable amount of Tolkien. I've never, to my knowledge, read any Welsh mythology. And so, unsurprisingly, I also did not know. I was of absolutely no help at this point. And so I said to Anna, I was like, well, it must be in one of like your textbooks that you've got. There must be something where someone's written about where Tolkien has, where you can see the influence of Welsh mythology on the writings of Tolkien. So I pick up one of her textbooks and I look at it, and sure enough, there's a page on it which goes like, how Welsh mythology influenced. And so I read out, I'm like, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? Now, why did we need to do that? We needed to do that because Anna was not born with the knowledge of how Tolkien's writing was influenced by Welsh mythology. She didn't come out of the womb and just have that knowledge in her brain just waiting to be released. Similarly, neither did I. We only know that by reading Tolkien's work and reading some Welsh mythology and going, oh, look how one influences the other. You see, if we're going to know the answer to that question, we need to be exposed to some Welsh mythology and some of Tolkien's writing, and then we've got a chance of knowing it. None of us just know it. We're not born with that knowledge. You see, as I was reflecting on how meaningful these Bible passages have been in my life over the past year, I began wondering this question: how different would my life have looked if I hadn't been reading these words? If I hadn't been meditating on them? If I hadn't been discussing them? What if I'd never opened my Bible and never experienced God speaking to me through these verses? Like, would I have just descended into a world of envy, feeling progressively worse and worse about myself as I also poisoned my relationships with the people I was envious of? Is that where that story would have ended? Would I have got stuck in cycles of anxiety and sleepless nights and not taken those to Jesus and allowed him to give rest to my soul? Would I have become progressively more and more insecure as I worried about what people thought of me and became increasingly unsettled every time I came across someone saying something negative about me? Now, of course, as with any hypothetical, we don't know. I don't know what the year would have looked like. But what I do know is that God used his word to minister to me in those moments and save me from some of the worst and most destructive elements of my character. Like Anna and Welsh mythology, I am not just born with the innate knowledge of how to think about and navigate the various things I face in my life. I wasn't born with that knowledge. I need to learn it. I need something to help me. And so often, that something I have needed has been the Bible. It's been the truths you find in that book. If I am going to navigate life well, I need to be opening my Bible and hearing what God has to say to me. So often it feels to me like people in churches talk about reading the Bible as if it's like a chore. You know, it's like one of the jobs I need to do each day. I need to read my Bible because, you know, that's what Christians do. Or maybe not that. We don't think of it as a chore, but we think of it as like a kind of religious practice, which we should do to kind of keep God sweet. But it's not that at all. No, the Bible is one of the key ways God ministers to us and equips us for life. Over the past year, reading my Bible, meditating on it, discussing it, has been an essential part of me just living life, just how I navigate the things I face. It has been a crucial part of me being able to fight against my negative impulses and pursue positive ones. It has been a central part of me experiencing God's love and presence and closeness and wisdom. So I'm gonna finish here, and here's what I just want to finish by encouraging you to do. It's not going to come as any surprise. Find ways to open your Bible this year. Just find some ways to do it. Find ways to hear God speak to you through his word. Find ways to meditate on the truths you find in it. Find ways to talk about it. Because as you do, this is what you will find. You will find God equipping you to combat your envy and to counteract your insecurities and to establish healthy relationships. Well, at least that's what I found over the last year. And of course, the exciting thing in all of this is that this year it'll be something different. And I don't know what it'll be. I don't know how God's going to minister to me through his word this year. I don't know what he's going to teach me. I don't know what words he's going to use to encourage me and comfort me this year. The same is true for you. I don't know what verses God will use for your good this year. But I can't help but wonder if so many of the issues we face, we end up ill-equipped to deal with because we're not exposing ourselves to the Bible. We're not allowing God to minister to us through his words. I don't know what words I'm going to need to hear from God over these next 12 months, but that's kind of the point. I open my Bible and I allow God to equip me to face whatever this year may have in store. So there you go. There's my Bible wrap for the year. Let me pray for us.